You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Your next G, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the show that demystifies all those gadgets you come across in your daily life. I'm Andrew McComb. Digital cameras are everywhere. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who hasn't got one. Born out of the technology that brought us television, digital cameras can be found in anything these days, from automatic teller machines to mobile phones. They're even on top of poles at intersections these days. Based on solid-state CCD, or charged couple device technology, the digital camera has evolved into a high-resolution camera, which quality is measured by the number of pixels, right? Wrong. There are many factors which determine how good a camera is, and more importantly, it's the quality of the lens in front of the camera. To discuss this and other aspects surrounding the art of digital photography, we're joined by Michelle Lawrence, an advertising guru and experienced photographer whose latest project entails photographing every nationality that calls Melbourne home. Some 250 smiling faces, to be exhibited at Melbourne's Federation Square for Australia Day 2008, and which will no doubt travel the length and breadth of Australia. Digital cameras have certainly changed the way we take photographs. Not only can we make great quality prints at home, we also email them to our family and friends and post them on the internet. Today we'll give you some tips from the pros about the costs involved, image format and sizes, image manipulation software, storage and backup. Everything you need to know to get you up and running in the brave new world of digital photography.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra kills off iMode. Mobile scheme failing the teenagers. Microsoft DRM hacked yet again. The EU backs Nokia's DVBH. And Vodafone asks, where's the 3G iPhone? All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, AAMI's website is hacked by Turkish troublemakers, Kunin set to open the Finn Reviews broadband debate, heads roll at Microsoft over Xbox fiasco, Nokia announces a quick fix for its GPS-enabled phones, and computers finally crack the drafts code. Welcome to Tech Talk News. One of Australia's largest insurance companies, AAMI, had its website hacked on Friday last week by cyber-savvy troublemakers from Turkey. AAMI's National Manager of Corporate Affairs, Robert Whelan, told The Age IT last week that despite fears customer account information may have been compromised, no customer details were accessed. Mr. Whelan said that the company's website was illegally accessed at about 9:30 on Friday morning, and that customer website requests were redirected to an offshore server displaying anti-Israeli propaganda. AAMI had their web server shut down while the security breach was investigated. Normal online operations were restored by 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Federal Minister for Communications, Technology and the Arts, Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan, will deliver a keynote address at the Australian Financial Review's Broadband Australia 2007 conference in Sydney on the 20th of August. IT Wire reports that the conference, designed to get to the heart of the great Australian broadband debate, will be addressed by key figures from all sides of industry and politics. Speakers at the conference will include Mr. Graham Samuels, Chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, Mr. Phil Burgess, Group MD of Public Policy and Communications at Telstra, and MDs and CEOs from many of the G9 member companies, such as Optus, Primus Telecom and AAPT. Broadband Australia 2007 will provide a timely public forum for the analysis of both the government and the main opposition proposals for providing high-speed broadband services to Australian subscribers. Peter Moore, manager of Microsoft's Entertainment and Devices division, resigned last week only days after announcing a $1.3 billion budget to fix the company's failing Xbox 360 games console. Moore will become the new president of Electronic Arts' EA Sports label in September. The move comes after a red-faced Microsoft was forced to concede to fixing systemic hardware failures in its Xbox 360 games console, with hundreds of thousands of customers worldwide reporting the so-called Red Ring of Death hardware failure on in-warranty and out-of-warranty systems. In a somewhat ironic announcement by Microsoft, Moore will be replaced by former EA president Don Matrick. Matrick will be appointed senior vice president of Microsoft's interactive entertainment business next week. In what has become a public relations nightmare for the software giant, Microsoft announced earlier this month that it would extend the manufacturer's warranty for its popular Xbox 360 games console from 90 days to 1 year, and then to 3 years. The warranty extension covers all expenses and every console sold since the launch of the Xbox in November 2005. Nokia has announced a quick fix for its GPS-enabled mobiles, providing faster acquisition time for its geographically challenged customers in the Southern Hemisphere. While subscribers in Europe and the United States have enjoyed GPS-equipped mobiles for some years, Australian users were excited but then perplexed this year when the first such units hit the market, but took half an hour or more to acquire satellite signals as the units reportedly searched the skies for satellites in the Northern Hemisphere. Nokia has promised a new feature called Assisted GPS, or AGPS, will address this time-to-first-fix bug and will be provided to all their GPS-capable phones and future devices that use GPS, in particular the 6110 and N95 models. AGPS uses the data component on GSM and 3G networks, and Nokia has warned that using AGPS may incur data fees depending on your provider and phone plan. And the centuries-old board game of Draughts, or Checkers, has finally been cracked by a team of computer scientists at the University of Alberta. With 200 computers working simultaneously since 1989, humans no longer have any possibility of beating the computer program called Chinook. The report, published in the journal Science, explains that the team's computer program spent more than 18 years analysing the 500 billion possible game plays, and that perfect play by both sides leads to a draw. Computer scientist at the University of Alberta, Jonathan Schaefer, wrote in the team's report that the result came as no surprise, that grandmaster players had conjectured this for decades, but that until now, no computer program had been able to tackle the game thoroughly. Schaefer said that with every possible move played, Checkers was the most complex game to have been solved by a computer. While many computer programs exist to play games, playing every possible move is a much more difficult problem. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
With the federal election approaching, the pollies are doing everything in their power to actually get their message across.
If it is 10%, make everyone pay 10% more and then have the government enforce that they have X amount of green power done by a certain date.
Have you considered a career in politics, Mark? I think that's a fantastic idea.
We should add ourselves as Helen Coonan friends.
You can, no.
Why are people standing in thunderstorms with iPods on?
You change it into little Einstein just to make it feel happier, but he still couldn't get rid of him.
Someone compared Korea and Denmark to Australia. Look at the map, you idiots.
You can actually use someone else's base stations, and when it gets back to the base station controller, you can shoot it off to your own media gateway.
The average person doesn't need
probably
to know this.
Probably not going to need to go there, no. But did you just say instication?
I think that's what I just said.
That's all right. Go on.
There was a program on the ABC about people like you.
Oh, really? It's the stick and the carrot, isn't it?
That's it.
And this way is both.
Don't eat the carrot, we'll beat you with the stick.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for this yet another week. of ups and downs in the technological world, and plenty of it this week from mobile phones. The Honourable Senator Coon has been off the fence again. She's been up there having a chat to Barnaby Joyce, of all people, our Senator in Queensland, about next year. We'll have a bit of a touch on that fairly shortly. In the meanwhile, we're going to talk about photography tonight, and I think everyone's made the move now from the old analog stuff, you know, the film, the silver halide crystals, into the world of digital. If not, it's in your mobile phone. Just have a look. We're going to talk to Michelle Lawrence about all things such digital. He's doing his own photographic exhibition, which is going to be at Melbourne's Fed Square in January 2008. That's next year, if you hadn't set your calendars already. Dr. Ron, how you been?
Not too bad, actually. I'm excited this week because I've fixed a potential fault with my new Sony Ericsson telephone.
Is this what we were talking about before off-air? MP3s that went funny. Do tell, what happens?
If you're the owner of a fairly new model Sony Ericsson, now the model that I've got is a W850i, and you have problems with it playing back audio files, where suddenly...
You have mentioned this.
Yeah, in the middle of the file, in the middle of the playback, it just comes up with an error message on the screen and says, playback failed, and stops playing. Or the playback starts to run at half speed, or double speed. It's extremely annoying. I've been using the Windows software that came with the phone called Disk to Phone, and if you transfer the audio files across with that software, it seems to be 100% A-OK.
I have a mobile phone, which is the same ilk as yours, and I have the same software, but mine works fine.
Do you use the software, though, to move music across?
No, drag and drop. Just drop it onto the memory stick and hit play, and that's what your frustration is, isn't it?
It is. This is what I was doing. I was just dragging and dropping and moving stuff around with the File Explorer in Windows and having all sorts of problems. And I'm not the Lone Ranger either, just quietly. If you have a look on the internet, there's a lot of people experiencing this problem. But
Robinson Crusoe is the saying.
Exactly right. But if you've got this problem, then try using the supplied software and see if it fixes the problem for you.
Very good. Graham, have you had any problems with your MP3 players of late? Or what gadgets have you brought in tonight? You normally have a different mobile phone every night.
Where's your GPS receiver?
No, look, there's my mobile phone I've got this week. Look at that.
Wow, that's from now.
It's very black.
It's my prehistoric Nokia.
It's very black.
GSM phone.
Oh, well, you better make sure you use that up because that'll finish very shortly. January 28, apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
No more GSM.
Well, you know, 3G, next G.
Had to upgrade my sister's phone to next G just this weekend gone.
Yeah?
Because she spilled on her phone or something and completely destroyed her old phone.
I must have been a Nokia.
It was, actually.
No, there you go. I rest my case.
Was it being upgraded from CDMA or GSM, Graham?
It was a GSM phone, and it's wrecked the screen, is now a black, smudgy thing, and, yeah.
So you didn't go to...
Did you let the eye smoke out of it?
Yeah.
We're talking about... What is it?
Not
blend it. The blend it thing.
Don't breathe this.
Yes.
But you didn't go to Optus 3 or Vodafone 3 or Hutchison 3?
No, I stuck with Telstra.
Graham, you a shareholder?
No.
Oh, jeez. I'm trying to work it out. I'm trying to work it out.
The attraction.
I know.
I'm on the cap plans with Telstra now, and their caps are not as attractive as 3's caps, for example. But this next G network of theirs just strikes me as being a really good idea. It just seems to be a well thought out sort of a network, and I want to be on it.
Fair enough. No, it is. It's a very good network. And I think it has...
And you pay for it.
You do pay for it. A lot. But no, there are places, as I'm having a discussion, once again off air with one of the other people in the office here, about mobile broadband. And I said, look, there's places where you can't get it, but you can get mobile net. You can't get anyone else, so you just pay the price or you don't have it. And it's simple as that.
Yep.
And it is a bit of an add-on too, because don't forget where this new technology, the new 3G HSDPA technology is going to replace CDMA on January the 28th, but we will talk about that very shortly. But first, let's talk about some letters.
And we had lots of feedback.
Dr. Ron, where do you want to start? Do you want to start or shall I?
I'll shuffle some papers.
Okay, you shuffle some papers. In the meanwhile, Alan Lazarus, and excuse me if I pronounced that incorrectly, Alan, sent us a voicemail message last week basically saying he couldn't get through on the spam filter for on air. Yes, we do lock it down. It keeps the riffraff out, but sometimes it keeps people like your good self out, and we do like getting feedback from you. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au or on air at feedback. On air at techtalkradio.com.au.
I have to re-enter, Ellen, because all my emails bounced, don't worry.
Do you still have the thing on the webpage where they can...
There is a form to email there, and can use that.
That's the best way to get past the spam filter, is to use the feedback form on the webpage.
And that's what the spammers use too, let me tell you.
www.techtalkradio.com.au.
So, yes, and other than that, you can actually ring us on our on the number, 1-300-664-882. And you can talk to our dulcet answering machine there and leave a message like Alan did.
And if you're listening in the break, you'll hear that number again.
You will indeed. All about Ubuntu, maybe.
Via Skype, a little while ago, one of you guys mentioned you were playing with Ubuntu. I was wondering how that test was gone, had gone. I'm happily running a test environment here using 7.04, which is becoming pretty much a good workhorse PC. Good to get some feedback from you guys.
Ubuntu 7.04, is that what you're using, Dr. Roy?
I'm using the version before that, which is...
What he said, and I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt, he said, I'm using Skype, and that's why it sounded like it did.
A little bit watery?
A little bit, like an MP3 on downloaded off a...
On Valium.
Yes.
The version I'm using is 6.06, which I think is the version before 7.04.
Ah, now, Ubuntu have an interesting version numbering here, because they call it 6.06 LTS, don't they?
So you've lost me already. Yeah.
Ah, but we're about to explain. What does LTS stand for?
That's something we're going to ask that question. Do you know what it stands for, Graham?
I do.
What does it stand for? It
stands for long-term support.
Ah, okay. So if you've got a problem, they're going to support it.
So, yeah, that version that you've installed is the one that they're going to keep supporting for a longer length of time than they normally would.
I always wondered what that stood for. Now I know. I'm glad
LTS,
I listened to this
show. Long-term support.
That's good.
Microsoft could pick that up. I don't know.
But the way that they number their versions, which
Microsoft has just announced they're extending the support for XP Home and XP Media Center to
Another 12 months.
To match the length of support for XP Professional to 2014 or something before they drop it completely.
Oh, really? That long? Well, good on you,
Microsoft. Drop it completely, yeah.
That's huge. But the version numbers on Ubuntu just follow a month and year pattern. So 7.04, which is the one Alan's using, is just 2007, released in April.
Oh, there you go.
The one I'm using was a June 2006 release. That's how they...
Alan compared it to using, a good PC.
It's a great PC. This is why I was frustrated with this Sony Ericsson problem. I'm trying to migrate away from Microsoft Windows as a desktop for my PC, and I'm moving more and more stuff onto Ubuntu and using that more and more.
How are you going with applications for it, though?
Yeah,
for general mainstream, like
yeah,
open
really
office,
well.
And we're going to talk open office the next couple of weeks.
They're going extremely well. And to answer your question, Alan, the experiment's gone fantastically, and I'm just scaling down what I'm doing on Microsoft Windows. But then Sony Ericsson have problems like this, and they've got a Windows-only version of the software, and I'm forced to keep maintaining a Windows machine so I can run these sorts of one-off applications.
Fantastic.
It's a bit sad.
Let's move on, because we've got a lot to do tonight.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Peter from the One Stop VoIP Shop last week sent us an email about hydroelectricity and renewable energy. I have it on good source. The reason why it's not accredited is that it produces hydrogen. But anyway...
That's why it fails at the green accreditation.
That's why it fails the green accreditation, because when you flood the place where the electricity is generated, it produces hydrogen. So it's not true CFC, carbon-free environmental thing, isn't it? There you go. So now you know.
I've got a feedback email from Scrubber.
Oh, yes?
Yes, he says, guys, you read out an email recently from a gentleman who said he no longer listens to your show because
you bag out
products and telcos, etc. What a wally. This guy should go and get himself one of those fancy 128 kilobit per second broadband connections from the Big T. You guys are doing Australia a great service by pointing out the many IT gadget communications pitfalls that are surrounding Australians that need to make decisions on what telcos or gadgets, etc. to purchase. Keep up the good work. Thanks very much, Scrubber. So that's
I think the only bit of that I'd challenge is actually calling the other listener with his opinion. I wouldn't be calling our listeners Wallies, but...
Hey, we didn't do it. This came as an email. And can I say that it's in big capital letters on the email, too? What a Wally.
Oh, well.
Thanks, Chris. I mean,
he's
Scrubber.
He's entitled to his opinion as well.
What else have we got? Stephen from... you know who you are, Mr. AAPT.net.au.
G'day, Stephen.
You nearly always state that you do not know anyone who does not download the latest movie, TV shows, etc. I don't use BitTorrent or even watch TV more than 2 hours per week. I use the web for downloading emails, work-related content, and voice over IP. Now you know someone. Well, great.
There's the one.
Stephen, congratulations. You must be on the only
You're
broadband
the one
package
conscientious
that's...
Yes. Internet user in the world.
So thank you very much, Steve. And please send them through. If you send one through now, we can read them out on air at techtalkradio.com.au.
And one lucky last from Peter, who said, I was helping him find a frequency for listening to us. And he said, cool, thanks, Dr. Ron. While I have you here, can I encourage you to practice speaking the name of the country you live in using four syllables? You have improved, but a bit more emphasis.
Are people having a go at your diction now? Well, my goodness.
He doesn't
me.
Like me saying Australia. He wants me to say Australia.
Australia.
I've heard a lot more, a lot worse.
Four syllables at once too hard for Melbourne Aussies. I hope not. Cheers, Peter. I get the impression that he may not be a Melbourne listener. He might be a bit of Sydney-Melbourne rivalry here, perhaps. Picking on the accents of the Mexicans, I don't know.
Hey, there could be a lot more people listening to us tonight, too, due to things in green this week.
What happened in green this week?
I got my head in the paper,
you
apparently.
You did, yes. Did indeed. That was good, wasn't it?
Hey, so if you want to learn a little bit more about Tech Talk Radio, visit the website, techtalkradio.com.au. But welcome to all of our other listeners who may be tuning in to us for the very first time, especially in and around the Melbourne area, either listening to us through 94.1 3WBC or 3XX on the other side of town. And a big cheerio to everyone else listening to us around the rest of the country too. Yes, we love a bit of participation. We've got phone numbers. You can subscribe to email lists. The best way is to visit the website and have a look.
Things there.
But welcome aboard. We try and demystify things. Is that what we do, Dr. Ron?
That's what we try to do.
And try and pull it down a little bit. We can talk digital photography in just a few moments. I've got one more email too from Craig Brendish. I don't want to sound like a commercial for Three either, but I commented...
Dr. Ron's job.
Yeah, sorry.
That's right. But just a comment or two re last week's discussion about the price drop in X-Series versus Telstra NextG. Just to bring everybody up to speed, Hutchison 3 dropped the price of their 1 gigabyte package to...
The data plan.
This is not telephone. This is for plugging a little thing into the side of your computer, or your phone for that matter. Yeah. You get a gigabyte of data, and it'll cost you all of around $29, plus I think a few little on-costs for a card or however you want to choose. But really good deals that they've got out at the moment. And the next comparable with that on NextG is $109. So that's what we were talking about last night. And Craig sent us an email. I would argue that 3X is not cherry-picking. It's available in most Oz capital cities and surrounds where the bulk of the population is. NextG data is too, but it's way too expensive. Realistically, the only people that would be using NextG for data are, one, those not paying for it personally. I can agree with that.
Yep.
two, those who travel regularly from city to regional and rural areas. And three, default regional or rural users. So very valid points that you make there, Craig.
Absolutely, yep.
And
enjoy the coffee, mate, Craig.
Oh, did you send him a coffee mug?
He got a coffee mug.
Oh, his coffee mug still on the go?
No. I think we're just about completely gone. There might be one left.
Limited edition coffee mug.
Yes. Well, they were a collector's item for
that
reason, weren't they? Now, while we're talking about mobile phones and technology, the ABC did a very sterling thing on Landline. Landline? Yes, Landline, the rural program that they have on television here. Spoke to a few interesting pollies about 3G rolling out. The concern is still very much that it's patchy in some of the CDMA areas, because that's what's happening. They're turning CDMA off and they're replacing it with NextG. It's still a bit of a touchy issue. There's a lot of people sitting on either side of the fence. Some people saying, it's great. And other people saying, no, it's nowhere near as good.
The suspicion would be, though, that once the CDMA network is closed, then some of those resources will get moved across to the NextG network and it will improve. Is that the general idea?
Pretty much the case from what Mark's been saying when he's been in here, that some of the infrastructure is doubling up. And, of course, the bandwidth and things like that, the number of channels has doubled up in some areas as well. So when they turn it off, theoretically, it'll become good. But let's have a quick listen to Barnaby Joyce, who's the senator for some part of Queensland, rural Queensland, in fact, and here's what he had to say.
I don't think a Telstra slagging operation is of any use. Telstra is the predominant carrier out in regional areas, and we've got to make sure that we have a good working relationship with this organisation, because regional areas are reliant on them in a major way. So I'm hoping that in a constructive working relationship we get a good outcome within time, and the bargaining chip we have is you can't turn off CDMA till you get an equivalent or better coverage through NextG.
And he's right there, the Senator for Queensland. He is very much along the lines that you can't turn off what currently works until they get it right.
He's right on the money.
Especially and for the rural, like the cowboys, the country boys.
Well, Mark Higgins explained to us a couple of weeks back that there are a lot of separate teams from separate organisations racing around Australia at the moment trying to ensure that the coverage is at least as good as the existing CDMA network, if not better. And even though, like what Graham's saying, that they're going to move a lot of the infrastructure into NextG once CDMA switched off.
It's got to be equivalent even before they do that.
Exactly.
That's a big ask for the people building the network, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it's a requirement. They have to achieve that.
The other interesting point that Mark has made in the past is that one of the problems is that the handsets are different. Where the old CDMA handsets, some of them had pull-out extendable antennas and things like that, whereas the new ones don't. And therefore, even if the network performs the same, because the handsets are different, the coverage is effectively different.
Yeah, well, you're
and
blocking,
that's a bit of a problem.
You're blocking your thingy-bob with your head and your hand when you hold your phone up to your ear. And a lot of the country guys were saying that the handsets are not anywhere near as resilient as they need to be. They want to be able to drop them, drive over with them, the tractor and all that sort of stuff, drop them in the cow feed and pick them out again and they still work. And they're finding that these things are actually built for city slickers where, you know, they get popped into a handbag and maybe they get dropped as you carrying the groceries to the car, to the kitchen and things like that.
So it'll be interesting
to
see if there's another generation of handsets that come out that might be a bit more suited.
Well, there is now a blue tick put on a lot of handsets for the heavy duty.
Oh, is there?
Mobile
okay.
phones, which are really built for country or rural users. So,
wish I'd got one of those for my sister.
Well, stick with us, guys.
You're also talking about a 10-year difference in change of technology.
That's right.
That's right. Mm. So stick with it because it'll only get better and as more and more cells get rolled out. Senator Coonan, here's the cynical side of me coming out. Election year, here we go. Senator Coonan was asked about the unfolding decisions that are going to be made leading up to this year's federal poll and her relationship with the coalition, et cetera, et cetera. Are they leaving the people in the country high and dry without adequate coverage was the question.
I would think that irrespective of an election, it's very important for telecommunications services more broadly that they meet the needs and expectations of consumers. And as I said, I make no apologies for the fact that we have tried to ensure that consumers are going to be getting fast broadband services, good mobile coverage, that when an industry player wants to roll out a new network, that there's the framework there to enable them to do it. It's the reason why I've allowed Telstra to make a public commitment. I've got a benchmark there to see that public commitment can be met, and I've got some residual powers to deal with it if it is not met. So we'll be watching it very closely. As I say, I think there's been a lot of concern about handsets, about dropouts, and I think it's important that we wait to see how the new system, when it's turned up and tested, fares against the old system, then we'll be able to make these judgments on behalf of consumers.
Valid comments, I think, towards the end there. Wait until it's all turned up and running properly. Dr. Ronald Graham?
Residual powers. Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
I was wondering if we were going to work that thing into the show.
Have you
read it yet?
We had to. My wife has.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
And what happened to Harry?
No, haven't read it yet.
We may have digressed. Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, you did that beautifully. All right, that's where Senator Coonan's sitting at the moment, and I think she's making some valid calls, which
absolutely,
is,
yeah.
Which is good. Maybe they are taking
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
Oh, yeah. Where's the 3G iPhone, asks Vodafone. Vodafone said it's
good
concerned.
Question. Just Vodafone.
Yeah. Vodafone says it's concerned that the current iPhone, Apple's latest killer gadget, does not operate on fast 3G networks. Well, haven't we spoken about that on the show before?
Mm-hmm. Perhaps Vodafone are listening.
Maybe. The 2.5G is going to be turned off fairly shortly. Was it 2G or 2.5G in the States these things work on?
2.5, because they use the
2.5?
Edge data network.
Okay. That's very slow data compared to what we're used to here with HSDPA and all. So, yeah, there's a few people out there screaming and carrying on. Whilst on the subject of handsets, Nokia, the world's Finnish mobile phone manufacturer, has been pushing for DVB-H, which is the digital video broadcasting to handheld device format, to be ratified, and the EU have backed them. So there we go. I think they've finally put these handsets together now, which have... So you can watch telly while you're driving home on DVB-H.
Oh, that sounds like a really bad idea.
Don't you think so? There's going to be so many car accidents in town.
While driving, yeah.
Everyone's just sitting
on
there
the tram.
In your hands-free kit watching the latest news from one of the news services and, oops, I'm sorry about that car in front.
Obey the road rules, everybody. There was actually a story in the mainstream media this week about Telstra unveiling new mobile phone television. It wasn't DVBH, though. It was using the data bearer on the 3G network to deliver television.
There
on
it is. Telstra have done this in the past.
Next
G to
challenge
they?
TV networks. We've got that further down the rundown, boys. But sorry. No, you can do it now.
I thought it was, pertinent. Now, Graham, have you used this when they trial it?
Only the demo tape that they were running at Mark had the swimming or something on. That was interesting.
When they had the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne.
That's when all three people watched it on their handset. Then they moved across to Hutchison's. Sorry, I had to get here before you did.
Telstra has launched a new on-demand television service for its third-generation mobile network that promises to fill the gaps in viewers' television watching habits. The carrier today hit the switch on Big Pond TV, which will allow users to watch a range of media on handsets using Telstra's 3G and NextG networks. There you go, that was in The Australian.
Very good.
And, of course, the internet is really becoming a fairly unstoppable device when it comes to people downloading and watching movies, as opposed to what our correspondent said earlier on this evening. There's a fairly major push at the moment by a lot of people. We're going through the record company scenario again, where they're all up in arms and huffy about, you know, digital rights and our music and protecting it and things like that. Well, watch this space. You ain't seen nothing yet, I think. In the next few years, as we all get ADSL2 in and around the cities, and hopefully the guys out in the country get the Wi-Fi, WiMAX, I mean. Hopefully they'll get good speeds out there and they'll be downloading it just like the rest of us are. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan and myself, Andrew McComb, tonight. Michelle Lawrence is coming up very shortly. We're going to be talking all about digital photography. But before we go to the break, Dr. Ron.
Here I am.
How are your chicken noodles the other night? We've talked about this. You set up your PVR for your
chicken rissoles.
Chicken rissoles.
They were awesome. Yeah.
And
that's going well, the new PVR, apparently. Yeah.
Any other reports as your father-in-law worked out how to actually record something on it yet?
He has. They've not a lot of trial and error, a little bit more error than trial, but they're getting there. They've missed a couple of programs, but they've also succeeded in recording some as well with the scheduler, but it's going well for them.
Fantastic. Well, in parallel to you setting up yours, Adam Turner was doing his mum and dad's at the same time. And that's The View from the Couch this week.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Not to be outdone by Dr. Ron, I also recently ushered a family member into the digital television age, helping my dad buy a high-definition television and hard drive recorder. Dad's getting a big, widescreen, high-definition LCD, a 42-inch Schaubler lens from Ensel with a great picture. He wanted to upgrade from using a VCR, and I convinced him that DVD recorders are a waste of time, and you really need something with a hard drive as well. Dad bought a Panasonic DMR-EX75 with my blessing. His brother already has one, so we took it for a test drive before Dad bought his. He also bought a Belkin Surge Protector, and I got one for myself as well. What I like about this recorder is that it's a DVD player and recorder, as well as a hard drive recorder. It allows chasing playback, which means you can watch the start of a show while you're still recording the end of it. It has onboard analog and digital tuners, as well as lots of inputs and outputs, which are really useful for connecting to pay TV and other devices. It also has a digital HDMI output and can upscale DVDs, both important if you're getting a big, high-definition television. The major shortcoming of this recorder is that it's only standard definition and you can't record two channels at once. It doesn't automatically record whatever you're watching, so you can't rewind live TV. There's also no way to download an electronic program guide. It doesn't have Ethernet, so you're stuck with the now and next details embedded in the broadcast signal. Despite this, I reckon it's one of the best mainstream hard drive / DVD recorders I've used. I wouldn't buy it for myself because it lacks a few features I want, but it's fine for mum and dad. My parents are in their late 50s, so they're not too old to learn new tricks. My grandparents, on the other hand, still get me to help program the VCR, so I wouldn't inflict this kind of technology on them. As for something like a Media Center PC, I definitely wouldn't inflict one on any non-tech person, although my Vista Media Center is fantastic. Something like a Topfield or a BeyondWiz personal video recorder is also a little expensive and complicated for the non-tech user, and these don't have DVD recorders. The BeyondWiz I have right now in the lounge room is pretty good, but my wife and I think we prefer the Vista Media Center sitting next to it. The Panasonic hard drive recorder was relatively easy to configure and use. There's obviously a bit of a learning curve upgrading from a VCR, but most of it's the fact that Dad's now got more devices connected together and yet another remote control to deal with. For example, he has a choice of AV inputs on the television, AV inputs on the VCR, AV inputs on the hard drive recorder, so it's easy to lose track of which device you're actually watching. I might introduce him to the joys of a programmable universal remote control for Father's Day. Connecting up all the cables was a tricky bit. I had to sit my dad down and ask him what he really wanted to be able to do. We drew a few flow diagrams until he was happy, then I hooked it all up. Your average person can connect a VCR to a television, but once you throw in pay TV and a hard drive recorder, it gets tricky if you want each to be able to record from the other. Like Dr. Ron's father-in-law, my dad's big contribution to the process was putting the batteries in the remote control. It took about 2 hours to get everything out of the box, plug everything into the surge protector, decide how we were going to connect up all the components, hook everything together, and then run the setup on the hard drive recorder and finally go through a few basic lessons. Obviously, it will take Dad a while to get the hang of all the advanced features, but I set it up in such a way he can always fall back on the VCR and the pay TV box in an emergency. He seems to be pretty happy with it so far. There were no chicken rissoles, but Mum had us over for a really great steak pie a few nights later.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And joining us here on Tech Talk Radio this evening, Michelle Lawrence, who actually, believe it or not, is a photographer, amongst other things as well. We also share a bit of office space at the Tech Talk Radio headquarters in West Melbourne. And he's here to join us this evening to talk about photography, because that's what you do. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, guys.
Thanks for coming in. Tell us a little bit about the photography and how you've seen things change across the course of time.
Oh, it's like everything to do with, modern technology. The camera's just changed dramatically from, when I started with a Brownie box camera.
The box Brownie?
Yep, had one of those and still got it. And now, you can do it with your phone. Although I do think that, you just have to be able to afford the best you can, because you don't want to end up with photos that look like they come out of a box Brownie. So, there's a huge range, and it's just been fantastic. The best thing is what you now do with your camera on your computer, really, and the things you can do yourself.
Well, that's one of the biggest things, really, isn't it? It's really the technology now allows us to go into the computer world and trick it up and make our own little images and email them off to everyone, which we can talk about a little bit later on. But in essence, photography, has it changed that much looking down the lens, lighting, setting pictures, how much sort of tolerance you would have in a photography compared to film now to this new...
Look, I think that at the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see, and the camera's just a means to allow you to record it and put it on something. So I don't think photography's changed that much in terms of how you do it. I mean, you see arty photographs of people doing all sorts of things, and it doesn't really matter how you record it. It's what you see. It's your eye. Your eye is the most critical factor in photography, full stop. It's then a matter of how good a quality you want to get it and what you want to do with it afterwards.
So it comes down to the operator, the person behind the camera taking the photo.
100%.
Well, that's good. We've proven that technology is not a stumbling block here in any way, shape or form when it comes to photography. What about cameras these days? Like, there's so many on the market. Like, everyone here has probably got a camera in their mobile phone.
Do you know I've never taken a photo on a mobile phone?
It's probably a good reason for that.
I just think it looks like shooting through gauze, It frightens me. In fact, I think the new phone that you talked me into getting to the other day, I thought, oh, I'll take a photo with this, and I looked through on the back of it, and I went, oh, no, I can't do that. So I don't use
that. It's good for your happy snaps, and I think that's what you've got to look at, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But do you really want to look at that afterwards?
No, but it's capturing the moment of being at the nightclub with your friends and saying, look who I'm pashing with. And
mate, I'm obviously far too old, you see, because I actually like to look at a photograph and I like to be able to see what I'm looking at and recognise it and know what it is.
Yeah, but that's the difference between being professional and being a hobbyist, really, isn't it? And I guess...
Well, maybe, but no, just for me, I just want to be able to look back. I mean, I can look back at all my old black and whites from the 60s and 70s and go, oh, you know, that actually looks like a decent photograph and I can see who was in it, you know. Now, you know, some of these small cameras... they really shouldn't be magnified much bigger than sort of a little, you know, postage stamp, really.
Michelle, digital photography has changed the way that we take photographs now and what we do with photographs. There was once upon a time we used to take a film to the pharmacist to get it developed, and we'd have everything printed out and we'd look at the photos. But now we might, for every maybe 100 photos that we take, or even maybe every 500 photos that we take, we might print out one or two, maybe.
You mean we used to with film?
That's right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. But I mean, it means you've got to hit the delete button a lot more, that's all. So you don't actually have to look back and see all the crap you've taken that you didn't want to see.
Yeah.
Now you just hit the delete button and bang, off it goes, you know.
Do you find yourself hitting the delete button a lot? Or do you still, like, traditionally, as a photographer, you'd just develop everything and print everything out?
Well, I run them out onto the desktop, but no, I get rid of stuff if it's really bad. You know, you don't want to be reminded of the mistakes and the, you know, the crap that you should have deleted. I tend not to delete much off the camera. I'll put it all into the computer and then I'll have a good look afterwards. And sometimes, you know, it's contextual. So I was doing that at that point in time. I'll leave that there and you just, you know, get it and put it on a disc and away it goes. Are you right in terms of the way we use a camera? I think it's changed dramatically. I mean, you don't even have to look through the viewfinder anymore. You know, you know, it used to be sort of looking through the viewfinder to see what you've got and look around. And now you just hold the thing up and bang, it's done.
Sure. Do you use the panel on the back, the big LCD on it?
Oh, on the digital camera I do. I don't. I mean, if I'm using, I've got a Hasselblad that I use, and I mean, you have to look through the viewfinder for that, because you've got to compose it in the, you know, on the viewfinder. But for I've got a Nikon, a high-end Nikon digital, and I can just hold that up and shoot, you know, and you can see, and it's fantastic. And then I can show the people I'm photographing as well, and then they go, oh, okay, you know, now I see what you're doing. And if you say, sometimes you put a wide-angle lens on the Nikon and they think you're shooting their feet, you know, you said, no. So then you show them and they go, oh, okay. So the brilliant thing about digital is, and every professional photographer will tell you the same thing, the great angst we all had as photographers when we had film was that a thing would be there when you got the film back, you know, it wouldn't all be black.
Exactly.
I can't tell you the angst in your stomach. And occasionally, I've only ever done two weddings, I think, in my life, and they were both close friends, and I begged them not to make me do it. And they said, no, I had to do it. And, of course, you just can't relax till you see the film because, you know.
If something really bad's happened, beyond my control, and this is all just black?
Well, and it happens, believe me.
Yeah, of course.
And, in fact, I'm doing this huge project at the moment, and it just happened recently with the film camera. I'd shot on the digital. I used the digital Nikon to set everything up and I just make sure the light's right. And there is, strange enough, there's a slight difference between the digital light that goes onto a digital and light goes onto a film. Film just needs a bit more light, maybe a stop, and maybe two sometimes. Anyway, I did this woman, and she's from the PNG, and she's very black, you know, anyway.
You should tell people about your project. I don't think we've really talked on that.
No, the project is, what I'm doing is I'm photographing one person from every country of the world living in Australia, and that's just about every country in the world. So it's a huge project. There's about 220, 230 photographs, and they're going to be 6 foot by, you know, 2 foot wide prints displayed at Head Square. Anyway, so I've spent every weekend for the last 2 years running around taking photographs of people, and I've had a couple of stuff-ups, and they've both been on the film on the Hasselblad. One of them was this very black lady from PNG, and she was fantastic. And I looked at the shots, and I thought, oh, my God. They're about two stops under at least, and you just can't save them.
It's skin tones and darkness just don't
mix. It's just black, you know. And so I rang the ring. I said, oh, son, I'm sorry, I have to come and redo those shots. And she said, what's the matter? I said, oh, they're all black. So she just sees that was fantastic. She said, Michelle, I told you I need two lights. So I went back and redid it. But even the digital, after that I started going back to, like we always used to do a Polaroid first, and so I've gone back to doing Polaroids and make sure I do a Polaroid on the film before I put the film through, so that, you know, if the light's right and the Polaroid is right, it's right on the film. But there is a difference between digital light readings and the film light readings. I'd love it if anyone could ring and tell me what the why it happens, because it's a mystery to me. But the beautiful thing with the digital now is I can actually show someone what I'm doing before I do it, and that puts them, generally speaking, at ease, and they relax, and everything's okay. So that's the great thing about digital, is you now have that 2.5 centimetre, you know, frame on the back of the camera, and they can see what you're doing.
Some 25 years ago, we made a huge transition in audio from cassettes and vinyl to compact disc. We had a lot of people come out, the audio files come out and say, hey, it doesn't sound quite right, this solid state thing. It's too digital, it's too pure. Have you noticed in your photography that the difference between film and digital, is there any sort of definitive line in the sand where you look at it and you go, hey, that's digital, as opposed to, oh, no, that's film?
The answer is yes, very definitely, especially if you're doing, like I'm doing very large enlargements, like they're 2 metres by, you know, 1.5 metres or something. I'm using transparency film. It has a very deep, lustrous, rich sort of look to it. The colour is richer, and the detail is unbelievable. And when we did tests, we were testing film. I tested 35mm film, and then I tested the digital 35mm digital, and then I tested the 2.25, and the 2.25 transparency film was...
Now, that's just 2.25 by 2.25 square, isn't it?
2.25 square inches, that is, yep. In the old format. It's okay. About 6 by 6 centimetres, something like that. So it's quite a big... It is a big area,
yep,
of film. But there is... it is at least 50% better at that size than the top-of-the-line digital camera.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a depth and richness to it that is just... You just can't see it. When you see it, you go, oh, God, it's unbelievable. And the Fuji film guys came down and had a look at the prints when they were done, and they went, ooh, we forgot how good film was, you know. It's their film I'm using. And their digital I'm using, really. So... there is a difference, and it's especially at the large sizes. When you're talking about the little, you know, postcards, I mean, you can't see it. It's only when you blow it up and you suddenly start looking at the detail. If the detail's not there, or if it's got that flatness or thinness to it, you just can't replicate it.
All right, and another thing, yesteryear we used to have the old sepia and black and white photos and things like that. I guess these days it's all done in Photoshop, but I would have thought film did it better, black and white film did it better than what digital does. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, because it's in the film, it's in the, you know, it's in the grain of the film and everything, but, like, you know, I used to spend hours in dark rooms, you know, doing prints and things, and there's no one doing it anymore. You can't... there may be one or two black and white printers in Melbourne still, but by and large, there's no one doing it. All the colour stuff's all automated. It's all, you know, digital on, you know, big digital printers. So there's no one there hand finessing a print anymore. So the answer is, yeah, I think it is better if you go back to the original black and white film and put on black and white paper stock. But you can't. No one's doing it. Where are you going to do it? No, I'm not going to get out the trays and do all my own developing again.
I just remember the old FP4, the Ilford FP4 and the HP5. You used to get the Patterson tank out and wrap your 35mm around that and stick it into a bit of microfilm.
Yeah. I've still got my Patterson tank.
Have you?
I didn't use Ilford much, actually. That was sort of the arty film, really. I was always into... The high speed grain, you know, like plus X and tri X was the stuff, and then later on Fuji made a fantastic 800 ASA colour film that was amazing, and you could just about shoot anything on that.
Can you still get those films, Michelle?
Yeah, you can. It's getting harder and harder. I think film's down to like 30% of what it once was.
They're not in the supermarkets anymore. I don't know whether you've had a walk through Safeways of late. Right. It used to be hanging there, you know, the old 35mm stuff, but it's gone.
Well, the professional guys will still use film because they prefer to use it if they can, but you've got to get a client who's willing to pay for it, and it's much more expensive. Like on my project, I'm using film, but I've had some grants and some sponsors give me some money so I can do it properly. So it's, you know, it adds quite a deal to a photography job, let alone all the inconvenience of having to go to the studio and, you know, you got to buy the film, B, you got to get it processed, C, you got to make a choice of a neg you want, then you got to get it scanned before you see a print. So it's a lengthy process. However, for what I'm doing, it's the right way to go. Digital just makes life so much easier. You don't have to worry about all that stuff.
Let's talk about the darkroom, the digital darkroom, otherwise known as Adobe Photoshop. Have you grown to love that piece of software?
Well, as you know, the other thing is I've been a Mac user, you know, for the last time.
Yeah, but Photoshop works on both.
And Andrew's now talked me into getting the PC. So I've bought the PC, and I'm on Vista, and I now discovered I can go to RAW files, because I'm shooting in RAW on the Nikon. I put it in the computer, and I just click on it, and it automatically opens up Photoshop. And I've just blown me away what you can do with a RAW format on the computer now. It is amazing.
What's the difference between the RAW format and the format that we usually see? We normally have JPEGs come out of my digital camera.
What? Yes, well, it's not compressed for a start, and you've got the three different layers. So you can, I mean, I showed it to Andrew. When we were playing with it, I showed it to Andrew. Andrew was blown away as well.
I must admit, the RAW stuff is just amazing. It allows you to expose your shot as if you were still standing in front of the subject without any degradation loss or without any form of, degeneration.
Yeah, I don't understand it, mate. I did it the other day. I went in and I'd shot something that was slightly over, and I put it into RAW, and it just, you were just setting all your settings again. So it's got everything. You just wind it back or wind it forward or do whatever you like. No degradation, no loss of anything. Everything, as long as it's there, it will take you back to where you should have been.
Mm. So it's a bit like in the old days, you know, I used to do some hobbyist level black and white photography, and shooting on that film you mentioned before, like the Tri-X and so on, you did have that latitude. You could get quite a range of different looks by changing the exposure at the printing stage.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of that, is it, in the digital world?
Probably 10,000 times better, actually. you had the Tri-X, you know, you also had various levels of paper. You know, you could go from up to four or five or whatever. And I went through a period where it was a really...
And the different papers give you different amounts of contrast.
The higher the number, the higher the contrast.
I remember all that. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you could do tone dropouts and there'd be no tone on the skin, for instance, just it'll be white, you know. And I went through this great phase where you put a stocking over the enlarger lens and you got the four or five grade paper out and you got this beautiful ethereal looking thing in front of you. But what the RAW thing does now, it's just amazing.
That and so much more.
Photoshop, you talk about all the different grades of paper and how you could do different effects. Have you given Photoshop a run for its money, not from a grading point of view, but just for, you know, maybe dropping an effect on to make it look?
But I think I'm probably past all the effects. I've looked at the effects file and I've played with them.
That was your question, really.
Yeah. I don't think I'll go there, you know.
Fun to play with, but not for work.
Well, you've got such a limited feel. I think it's really for people who haven't done it before, you know. If they want to go and play with all those things, it's sort of like go and start again. But I've done all that and I don't really want to do it again. So, you know, we used to do stuff with glass filters and all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
But I must say, I think that what they've done with RAW files and how you use them on the computer now is just, it is absolutely mind-blowing. You sit there and look at it on your screen and you think, God, you know, did I actually do that? That's amazing. Now, as long as you've got it in through the eye, you know, as long as your eye focused and you were able to, and the other thing, of course, is with the digital camera, you can, if you put it on program, you know, you really don't have to.
It does all the settings for you.
Yeah, but you do have to have an eye so that you know what you're taking. That's all. And you know, it doesn't matter how good the camera is. If someone has no eye, my I've got twins.
Like me, for example.
No, because I haven't seen what you can do. But I've got twins. I've got a 25-year-old boy and a 25-year-old girl, and the girl, she just frames stuff, and there's sort of heads cut off, you know, halfway up their head. I don't mind cutting off across the forehead, but, you know, she cuts her heads off or has sort of 10 inches of sky and 2 inches of someone down the bottom. Whereas my son, he's just got the intuitive feel for it. He knows exactly how to frame it, and he gets a really good picture.
Do the old rules still apply, like the two-thirds, one-third, or whatever it is rules? Do they...
I don't know what those rules are.
That's interesting in itself.
Would you explain that rule to me? What is it? Two-thirds, one-third?
I can't remember. I never knew what they were, but, yeah, it's the horizon either a third, a half, not in the middle, or whatever that was.
I'm sort of a basic believer in if it looks good, it's okay. You know, so if it doesn't look okay, well, a lot of people complain that I cut people off, you know, across the forehead, you know, with the heads. But that's sort of like a horizon line, if you like, and you want to close in on someone's face when you can't have the top of the head. But I think there are some basic rules, and the basic rules really are to do with light more than anything. You know, they're to do with what the equivalent of what you let you your lens is open at and what the speed of the shutter is, and that makes all sorts of different equations as to what's going to be in focus and what's not in focus, because you've got depth of field and all those sort of things. So there are technical issues with a camera that haven't changed in, you know, 100 years or whatever.
So with your digital SLR, you're still stop down and slow down the shutter speed, and you get...
Well, if you put it on manual, of course, you can do it if you want and replicate everything. The beautiful thing, again, is you can see it in the back of the screen. You know exactly what you got, you know. But manual, using a digital camera manually, the high-end stuff anyway, I'm talking about, you know, really expensive digital cameras, is you can do all the things you used to be able to do, with the beauty is you can actually see it as you're doing it. And I think that has probably been the most significant change in photography, is you can, it's like a Polaroid, only 10 times better, you know, you can actually see it.
And you can make minor adjustments as you go if something's not spot on, you can make the change there and then. You're not waiting a week for the film to be developed to see what you've done wrong.
Look, I've been in advertising, you know, most of my life, and I can remember seeing car photographers take all day to get one shot. And they'd run off Polaroids, and then they'd do test rolls, and they'd do another Polaroid, and this would go on till 5 o'clock, and then they'd do the shot. Now, that was costing thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, if they'd had, at that stage, you know, the big format digital cameras, you wouldn't need to worry with all that stuff, you know, because you just have to be so pin spot, you know, accurate with everything, with film.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Michelle Lawrence is our guest this evening. We're talking digital photography, and we're going to take a small break at the moment. When we come back, how does this affect you? How much money would you expect to pay for a camera these days? What sort of printer do you need? What comes with your software and all that sort of stuff? So stay with us after the break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor Carly, visiting the relatives, can't washing the car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. There's another show going on here in the studio. We've got cameras out, we're comparing notes and things like that, all sorts of things.
Well, sorry, Andrew, it's all right.
Well, it is a photography program. What's that you've got there on the desk, Graham? There's a little snappy thing you've got here for...
It's one of the Canon cameras. It's an IXA 70. It's a 7.1 megapixel little credit card size camera.
Very good. Does it work?
It works.
Yeah, how do you get the pictures out of the camera into the thing? Is it Bluetooth? As Adam Turner would say, has it got Ethernet? Hello, Adam, I just got your email.
No, it hasn't got Bluetooth or Ethernet. No, it's got a USB port that plugs into the computer.
Yes.
And it's got a memory card you can take out. And the memory card you can take out of this, and you can put straight into the printer I've got at home, which is an Epson printer. And you can, print straight from the memory card on the printer without having to use the computer.
Yeah.
So what sort of card's in there? Is that an SD?
It's an SD card, yeah.
And how many, what's the memory on it?
This came with a little 32 meg card, and I've taken that out.
Why do they do that?
I've no idea. You can take about four pictures at the full.
Unbelievable. I'd get one shot out of that, probably. Oh.
Yeah, I've put in a 512 card, and I can get... Lance just about to tell me I've got 94 left, and it's got probably a couple of dozen on there already. Right. So
what did you pay for that?
We'll go now, shall we, Ron?
Yeah, I think this sells for about $430 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing with those things, of course, they've all come down from, I don't know.
That's one of the good questions I was going to actually ask, if I can get a word in here.
Go ahead, Andrew.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You've been listening to Graham Callaghan, and our guest this evening is Michelle Lawrence, who is a photographer, amongst other things, and we're talking digital cameras and digital photography. Now, Graham just happened to get out his little box brownie here, one of these little SLR-y... No, it's not an SLR, it's a...
point and shoot, right?
Point, is that what they call them? Point and shoot. What sort of bang for your buck do you get when you get to these little things? Like, some of the notes I had down here is, obviously lenses play an important part, and as far as I'd be concerned, a lens is the money goes in a lot of respects, because your megapixels isn't everything.
When I pulled it out, that was the first thing Michelle looked at, was the lens.
Yeah?
He went straight to the lens to see what it was.
Yeah, well, the lens is, you can have as many megabytes as you like on the inside the camera, but if it's looking through crappy plastic, you know, it's not going to see much, is it? So I do look for, you know, the best lens I can get. A lot of people like the big zoom ranges. I don't personally like a big, long zoom range. I like a shorter zoom range because, you know, the magnification is a bit of a problem, I think. But
if the optics aren't quite up to it. Yeah.
You know, and optic, look, it's all about the lens. And I've only really, I actually don't have one of those.
That's been the same forever with photography, right?
That's right.
It's always been about the lens.
It is. Well, that's what photography is about. It's replacing your eye with a bit of glass. You know?
And is that where the money goes in a digital camera? Like if you're buying a camera?
Not really. I reckon now, look, it's interesting that the new Nikon I've got is, say, the body's about $8,000. The lenses, you can get lenses for $20,000 or more, you know. So lenses can outstrip in terms of, you know, cost the body. And there's so much now in the lenses where you've got, you know, stability control and all sorts of things in the lenses now. But it's really all about the amount of glass in there and how much light gets through. So the very best lenses tend to have a low number, like a, you know, 1.2 or a 2, f2, or 2.8 at the lowest.
Is there anything in the manufacturer of the lens? Are all lenses made similarly these days, or are some manufacturers, like, you know, cars, are some better than others?
Oh, look, I actually don't know how much difference there is. I think the good cameras, if you get Canon or a Nikon or any of the, you know, the big brands, you know, you basically get a pretty good bit of glass, you know. Some of them have, that's really off-putting, isn't it, when he does that?
Sorry, he's taking photos inside.
I, as a photographer, I like taking the photos.
It's fun being on the other end of the lens, isn't it? Yeah, good.
No, it's not good. The glass is really important, but, you know, the manufacturers will all say they've got a certain coating on their lenses, or they've, you know, they're whatever, they asymmetric or whatever. They'll say all sorts of things about it. As soon as you look through the lens, you can tell whether the thing's any good or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look through a lens. A demountable lens, which you get on a digital SLR, for instance, you can take the lens off and you just have a look through it and you can just see, you know, what's in there. But the more weight in there, the more glass in there, the better.
Okay, that's a good rule of thumb. Now, we've all got, well, not all of us, but some of us have started off life with film SLR cameras, single lens reflex cameras, where you look through down through and out the lens.
Yep.
You can actually get cameras. I think some of the manufacturers allow all your old lenses from your old cameras to be put onto the new digital cameras these days, can't you?
Well, that was why I stayed with Nikon, because I had all these old lenses going back 30 years. And
did they work on a new camera?
They do. It's fantastic. There's a program inside.
That's amazing. So a 30-year-old lens works on a two-week-old...
And they are beautiful lenses. I kept them for that. I've got a very good 50mm lens, which is a standard sort of normal field of vision lens, and it is just fantastic. And the camera, there's a program in the back of it. You can set it to non-CPU lens, and it recognises the lens, so it knows what it is. It won't autofocus, but everything else is done for you, and it shoots with it. You know, you can mount it onto the body, and away you go. So,
for a professional photographer, the lens is such a huge investment. You'd have a lot.
That's right. Yeah. You're talking about thousands and thousands for each lens. And the big zoom lenses now, of course, you're talking, you know, you can pay $10,000, $20,000 for one of those lenses. Well, the big ones, the really big, you know, long lenses, you know, that you see the press blokes carrying around with them, and they're mega.
Absolutely. So it's good that the big names are accommodating the connection that you have to look at, or is it the size? Is there a standard size?
It'll be the connection. Well, for years there was a difference between a screw-on lens and a bayonet mount lens, and bayonet really won in the end. Canon lenses will only fit on Canon cameras. I mean, you can get adapters to fit them, and then you've got all the aftermarket lens manufacturers, and you tend to get adapters to fit them onto either a Nikon or a Canon or whatever. The lenses are a huge investment, and if they're good lenses, you don't want to let them go.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to keep using them.
Is that carried on into digital cameras like Nikon and Canon?
Yes.
They've got different attachments.
And, you know, you just want to stay. They've all got they tend to have the same. It's like cars, you know. They all tend to have the same sort of focal lengths, you know. So there's a 50mm and a 75mm, and then you get the zooms will be a 30 to 75, what happens to be a 28 to 70, whatever it is. So they'll have sort of equivalents. But, you know, you're either with one system or the other, really. That's the only problem. So, anyway, that's why I started. stayed with the brand I stayed with just because I had all those old lenses and I knew I could stay with them, and so I did. But the lens to me is really critical. I think with the new digital cameras, the bodies have become much more important. They're also much bigger. If you look at the DSLR...
I don't say they go to the small, haven't they? These things are great.
Oh, well, these things have, but the big professional ones, like the big Canons and the big Nikons are much bigger.
But it's nice to hold something in your hand when you take a photo, I would have thought.
I like to have a bit of body, which is why I don't have a point and shoot, because I find them too fiddly and they're just little, you know. Well, although I think I'd probably need to get one because, you know, carrying around a big...
Well, you got one in your mobile phone as a little point of view. I know you don't like using your mobile phone, but like what, 2 megapixels? Some of the new cameras. What's yours, Dr. Ron? How many megapixels
Mine's
in your camera?
A 2 megapixel. I think the last phone I had was a 1.3.
I would have thought that'd be all right for a snappy thing. But let's talk about domestic photographs, because I know how you hate mobile phone cameras. Speaking of that, whose is that?
It's mine. It's yours.
So let's talk about domestic cameras for mums and dads. Like if you were sending someone off to the one of the major retailers.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, what's a good budget to get yourself a half-decent camera which is going to let you print a picture on an A4 sheet of paper, it's going to let you email off something of relatively good quality, and the best thing about it is it's going to work. You don't want these...
Well, I reckon the price points are there, and I was looking in at JB Hi-Fi, they knowing I was coming on here, and the prices, the top of the range point and shoots look to me to be around the $600 mark now, $500 to $600.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Sony have got little cameras out, they've Nikon, Canon have all got really good top of the range point and shoots. My advice to anyone is pay as much as you can possibly pay for one of these things, because you just get what you pay for,
mm-hmm.
really. So if you're down at the $100, $200 mark, don't expect too much. But if that's all you can afford, well, that's all you can afford. So, you know, it's really what you can afford, but just all I say to people is make sure you buy something that you can afford and spend as much as you can on it, because you'll see the difference when you see the pictures.
What do you reckon the lifespan is of a digital camera these days?
It's probably like a computer, you know.
2 years? A couple of years?
A couple of years, probably. Well, because they just keep... I mean, the R&D must be enormous in these things, because they just keep coming.
You've got a lifespan of how long the camera is going to be useful until it's going to be superseded or replaced by new technology versus how long it's going to keep working and working and working for. I would imagine that they're fairly robust, the cameras these days. The lifespan would probably be 10-15 years, but they're going to be superseded fairly fast,
aren't
they?
Well, it's more to do with the computer innards of the things. And, like, you know, my cameras now, I've got 4 gigabyte cards in mine. you can get an 8 gigabyte card now.
That's a lot of photos.
You know, mate, that's a serious amount. Well, you see, with RAW, it takes up huge amounts of space on your card.
Well, you mentioned before the break, Michelle, that a lot of us are used to having JPEG images coming out of our little point-and-shoot cameras, and they may be 1.5, 2 megabytes in file size. How large would a typical RAW file be?
I think that mine probably around 50 megabytes or something like that. Maybe they're big.
You need a bit of computer power behind that.
Yes.
How many megapixels is that?
I don't know. Do you know anything?
For the camera...
No, I couldn't tell you.
I don't know what that is.
No.
Don't know.
Okay.
I do know that you need more and more space to store these photographs. So that's where I think the development's going in the smaller cameras too, because why they sell a camera with that much? How many, what was that?
It's 35. This one's 7.1 megapixels.
Storage.
Storage. I came with it, 32 meg card.
Can you believe that?
Useless.
What brand was that? Canon, did you say?
it's a Canon. Yeah, but they all do it. They all come with these tiny cards.
But that's how they keep their prices down. When you go in there, you buy it, and they go, well, hang on a sec, you're going to need a bit bigger card.
You can take, like, 7 shots.
And the trouble is, when you go into the camera store, when they sell you, a gigabyte card...
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know, a couple $100. You go down to the computer parts store and they're, 50 or something.
Oh, one... I saw in a promotion over the weekend, 1 gigabyte cards for everything for $32, $35, something like that.
Yeah, but when you're in the camera store, that's not what they sell them to you for. Because they've got they've got the camera and they say, oh, look, this is a card it comes with, Sorry, you can take one photograph with it. what you need is the gigabyte card or a 2 gigabyte card, and then they slug you. So it's just their way of sort of...
So if you're buying that sort of thing, it's important to do a bit of research first and know what's around.
Absolutely.
It's a bit like a car in all respects, isn't it? You buy the car based on this is what I want, and the accessories, they get you on those. Yeah.
Well, that's right. It's like my wife went to buy a heater the other day. The wheels, it comes with wheels, but the wheels were extra. $40 for the wheels. So, anyway, there's all those sort of things you need to worry about. But I just reckon... But, you know, spend as much as you can on one of these things because...
were they alloys? All right, you're listening to Michelle Lawrence. He's a photographer. Now, you've got a big thing coming up fairly shortly in Fed Square, which is All of Us. Now, there's a website, allofus.com.au,
that's the one,
which has got all your handiwork on at the moment. People can go and check out some of the photos you've been taking. Is there anything else that we probably really haven't touched on tonight? Printers and things, I think, are for another night and what you can do with your images. But I think generally in the photography, we've spoken about the lenses, we've spoken about the cameras, you know, varying in price from a couple of bucks up to many thousands of dollars. I guess let's look at the crystal ball thing to conclude. Where do you think photography is going to go digitally in the next few years? Are we going to get faster, bigger, better, or is it going to pretty much stay the same?
I think because it's now so computer-based, it's just going to basically follow the computer model. And, you know, as you get these handsets that, you know, tell you what to do and, you know, have your little television on there and your phone and everything, I think you're going to see better and better cameras wound into those things. That's at that level. At the top level, the things just get bigger and bigger. So you will get the file sizes that allow you to replicate what I can get now with a 2.25. The speed now is, I just can't imagine them getting any quicker. They're just, the speed in these things is just fantastic, you know. And it'll be all to do with storage and how much you can put onto it. You know, as the cards get bigger, you know, you're going from, you know, a gig.
So it's coming down to the cards, really? Storage.
It's all to do with the computer. Look, they've been making lenses for, you know, hundreds of years. So no one has to worry about the quality of lenses anymore. You pay for, you know, if you want a good lens, you pay for it. That's as simple as that. If you want a camera with a really good lens, then you have to buy a digital, you know, SLR that you can unbolt the lens and put a different lens on it. The point and shoot doesn't allow you to do that. So what they do in the point and shoot, they give you the, you know, infinite zoom lens, you know, from 0 to 200 or whatever that is to be. So I think at the top end it'll be more to do with computer power, speed, you know, storage amounts.
And megapixels.
Then, yeah, and all, and megapixels, yeah. Well, the megapixels is really at the end of it. What it,
that's the quality of,
yes,
it. How many millions of pixels you've got collecting those bits, right, of light on your then, CCD, your charge couple device.
Yeah, and then how quickly you can start manipulating it on your computer, yep, you know. And I'm sure it's going to get better and better. I marvel at it now and look at it and I can't believe how quick it all is, but yeah, I'm sure it's just going to get better.
Michelle, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us here on Tech Talk Radio tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan. Thanks to Michelle Lawrence, who's left the building. He's heading home for this evening, so thanks for the All About Photography. And it's about now that we say if you're expecting something that we've teased on the program, it might be dropped due to timing constraints. Dr. Ron?
It was terrific having Michelle on board, wasn't it? It was great having you here to talk about photography.
Oh, you learn all sorts of little things as you go past, isn't it?
You do. Andrew, Graham, the federal government has conceded that its regulatory scheme governing premium mobile content providers had not met community expectations.
Okay.
These are these sorts of services where you sign up and it only costs you $4.95 to send a message and you're only going to get a minimum of 10 coming back to you at $4.95 to receive them. And
this is like getting a ringtone. You know those ringtone things that the kids subscribe to and then they just keep coming?
But then they keep giving you more and more ringtones and charging you for each one.
Yeah, about $4 or $5 an SMS or something ridiculous like that.
They make it way too easy to subscribe to and it's very easy to abuse as well. Now, I've received...
Oh, yeah.
So you might think you're buying just one and you're subscribing for a whole service to keep getting them.
Well, that's right. You're subscribing to a series, perhaps, without realising it. Now, I've actually received these sorts of messages on my mobile phone where people have accidentally typed or mistyped a mobile phone number into a web page. And it says, thanks very much for signing up to Jamster or whatever the service was. And this message has only cost you $4.95. And I thought, what? Well, I haven't subscribed to anything. And you ring them up and give them a real barreling over the phone. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, must have been, you know, a mistake.
So someone spammed you in one of these sign-up things online.
Well, I don't think it was intentional, but they've mistyped the mobile phone number.
That's a bit crook.
Well, it is, because if you didn't realise and just ignored it and went, oh, yeah, whatever, and then a couple of weeks down the track tried to unsubscribe, it would have cost you 15, 20...
Can you do that?
You'd normally expect those things to send at least the first message is a free sort of confirmation message to make sure there's...
Yeah,
the
you'd
right
have
phone.
To opt in.
Yeah.
Because what's to stop me signing you up for something like that? And
well, that's the question, isn't
that's,
it?
That's, is this the whole thing about this,
is this it? Is why the government's saying that it may have failed. As at a telecommunications conference last week, Senator Helen Coonan said that premium mobile content providers would face tougher regulations following a review of the co-regulatory scheme governing the industry scheduled to go ahead in October.
Well, I hate premium numbers anyway, because they're not in my cap. Do you have that same problem?
I do. I have exactly the same problem.
So we found something that's outside the three cap.
Yeah, and...
Yes.
You
yes.
can only use a certain proportion of it for international calls, which I don't agree with either.
Oh, no,
you
use
the whole, yeah, the whole thing should be able to be used for anything.
Spend a lot of the time on the phone overseas, Dr. Rundy?
I do a little bit. Andrew does. Yeah, we've gone off topic again. But anyway.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, this is Tech Talk Radio at its finest.
Off topic is what we do.
Yes. At the time, the ACMA said the scheme would contain provisions requiring premium mobile content providers to stop unwanted services immediately. However, some mobile content providers were not meeting their obligations under this scheme, said Senator Coonan.
What about all this adult content that's starting to sort of find its way onto the mobile market? Because if you've ever been to some of these...
Do you mean like wallpapers and ringtones?
Well,
but
even with the advent of broadband on your handheld now, on your mobile phone, which is what Next G and 3G and is all about, and all the providers do it, there's now getting this level of content available online, which is probably a little bit adult-oriented. And what's to stop the young kids getting on there and finding their way around it? And that leads on to the next thing, which is people are going to download this sort of stuff and get caught with it, and it's like... Dearie me, now, here we go again.
Paris Hilton in a bikini behind bars and all this sort of stuff. But there's whole pages in magazines devoted to wallpapers and things, and people could pick up your phone as a joke and subscribe to this sort of stuff, and you're in a whole world of pain then trying to unsubscribe.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the content of the new regulations is going to be. It'll definitely be one we'll be keeping an eye on
in
the future.
We definitely will.
It's also very much open to abuse in a lot of respects, because what you guys were saying there, I did not know that someone could go onto a website, and we probably shouldn't have mentioned on the radio now, that someone can go in and sign up for you. The other thing too, which is really, I've had this firsthand, is if you've got kids in your house, and as adults you leave your mobile phone lying around the place, just watch out what they do when they get hold of your mobile phone.
I've got a movie from you last
week.
I need to ask you about that. I can, pockets here.
My little 5-year-old can text movies anywhere around the world. Let me tell you, that's not part of the cap.
It was very impressive. It was a 30-second movie of your kitchen, and I couldn't quite understand the song she was singing.
But having said that, there are facilities that you can get on your mobile phone, and there's probably a lot of people out there listening to us who can go, oh yeah, been there, done that. And like you can get your MTVs where they send you a movie each whatever. You can log on and check your eBay online. You can get all these, Big Brother packages, which Adam Turner watches all the time. All that sort of stuff that's available through the browser on your 3 handset, and the kids can subscribe to it just by accidentally, randomly pushing a whole heap of buttons on your mobile phone. And when I happened to me, I actually rang Hutchison up and said, hang on a minute, this is a business tool. We don't pick brother on business tools, let me tell you. And they said, I'm very sorry about that, sir. We'll remove that from you straight away. So it was a very nice gesture that 3 actually did that.
That's good.
But having said that, I said, what safeguards do you have to stop unauthorized access to your mobile phone? To which the response was, you can put a pin lock on it.
No.
Exactly.
No. You might be running a business and have half a dozen mobile telephones on a business account, and you might have employees that are using the phones for legitimate business purposes, but you don't want them to be wandering off and subscribing to Big Brother services and stuff, so you can't actually lock that.
No. Well, not that they're letting on to me. Maybe you can, but it's a well-kept secret at the moment. Now, speaking of mobile phones, do you remember iMode?
Yes.
What do you remember about it? Not much, I bet.
No, I'm trying
just
to...
Just a silly little,
now.
Silly little ad with a ball that bounced around the screen,
that's right,
I think.
The TV ad with the pink bouncing ball.
That's the one. Telstra is set to dump its iMode mobile data service, which failed to catch on with the Australian mobile users after nearly 3 years in the marketplace. I wonder why. GPRS has never really cut it for me. It's a very slow method of data communication. And it was their own sort of funny thing, wasn't it? Like, you can only get certain... I don't know very little about it. But I remember the ads.
The TV commercials were catchy, but it was a GPRS data service, wasn't it?
Yeah. NextG and all that, what you can get now on your handsets, has really made this sort of service obsolete. But it was a partnership, I think, Telstra had with Japan's Docomo. Is that how you pronounce it?
Docomo.
They came out with it when it was all the rage in Japan and all that sort of stuff. So Telstra got on the bandwagon here and thought, yeah, that'll be good, this market. Wasn't quite ready for it at that point in time, so as a result, I don't know anyone with an iMode mobile phone. Pity Mark's not here, he'd probably know all about it, having been from that back end. But so that's, Telstra killing off all that sort of stuff too. But that's just the price of progress, don't you think, boys?
It is. Yeah, leave GPRS behind, leave 2G behind.
Indeed. All right, well, it's now time to, we'll take a break and we'll come back very shortly with...
All the usual.
And I'm sure you've got something for us to cringe about again, Dr. Ron.
Haven't I always?
It comes to those points in the program where you go, oh, here we go again. And that's coming up if you're listening to us for the first time.
You close your eyes and you cross your fingers in here, don't you, when I'm coming up with
you on
spot?
I do. Because this is, yes.
I think this is live. What's he going to do next?
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron on the other side of the panel and Graham Callaghan.
Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
ViewSonic have released the PJ258D iPod Projector.
An iPod projector.
Now, this featured in the current edition of Australia's T3 Gadget magazine. The T3 review says, soon everything is going to have an iPod dock built in. TVs, toasters, horses, children, all will be able to mechanically and electronically accommodate Apple's populist widget. So you've seen all these accessories that have iPod docks.
When's an iPod going to have Ethernet? That's what I want to know.
Yes.
And Bluetooth that talks to something other than an Apple TV.
Well... maybe. Let's start with the projector. Take this high def, that is to say 1024 by 768 projector, which comes with a special hatch so your thin white Duke can mount up and ride. Result is those teeny tiny pod videos are pumped up to pseudo cinemascopic glory, theoretically hitting 300 inches across.
Dr. Ron, put your superlatives book away.
No, this is T3.
Does this strike anyone else as being a really bad idea?
Who wrote this?
It's a T3 review. We've got an 80-inch image with ease, even in the confines of T3's squalid apartment. Blacker than black, the results are better than adequate, with what AV gurus call quite deep blacks. You can also plug in your laptop or DVD player via S-Video and... composite. It sells for...
Well, that sounds like a better idea.
Yeah, $17.99. They love the easy-to-set-up crisp images, but they hate the lack of HDMI them and 1080 penis.
Okay, so you can't plug it into your plasma or your LCD. And what was the other bit? HDD, but what? It's not high definition.
DVD player via S-Video and composite. Yeah, lack of HDMI them and no 1080p.
Would you buy one?
I don't think so.
No, exactly.
I don't have an iPod.
Exactly.
Here it is, everybody! The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
I've got an oldie but a goodie here because I happened to use it during the course of the week and I thought, well, I think we should tell our listeners about it again. Have you boys used Mailinator before? I'm sure you have.
Absolutely, have.
It's a remailer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. No, it's not.
It's an instant mailbox for when you need to subscribe to something. A web page asks for an email address. You can just give it any email address. You don't need to sign up first.
Right.
and it'll send mail to Mailinator, and you can go and pick it up
so
later
you,
on.
You have a mailbox sitting there waiting for you, Dr. Ron, and you've done nothing. Do you know what your email address is? It's drron@mailinator.com.
Oh. Or it might be techtalk@mailinator.com.
It could be.
Oh. Or it might be getnickedspammers@mailinator.com.
Oh. So you get the hang of it? So basically, if you're at a website and you want to, someone's asking you for an email address, and you go, no, I don't want any more spam.
You can just type anything in as an email
you
address.
You type anything in as an email address. Then you go to mailinator.com and check your email.
Oh.
Simple as that. They only last for a couple of hours or not long at all, really. But
yep, you don't need to sign up first, but there is no security. You can just sign in and you just put in what email address you use and pick up your mail.
Don't think of it as your personal mailbox there that no one else can have access to. Just treat it as something that's just going to be there for a matter of moments.
Instant, disposable, short-term email.
And it's a great way, if you want to protect your email address, and I think we all should these days in this day of spam, and you're on the site which you don't quite trust, then don't give them your own personal email address.
Mailinator.com.
Yes, that's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The
Odd Spot
on Tech Talk Radio.
North Korea's security agency has ordered the shutdown of karaoke bars and internet cafes, saying they are a threat to society.
What? How can an internet cafe be a threat to society unless you've got a SIM card?
Well, it is if you're in the North Korean government.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
A South Korean newspaper reported that refugees from the reclusive state say such outlets are largely located in the northern region that borders China and are frequented by merchants involved in cross-border business rather than ordinary citizens. The North's Ministry of People's Security said in a directive that all karaoke bars, video screening rooms and internet cafes operating without state authorization must shut immediately.
Yeah? Mm. You reckon they got a big stick, they're going to go around and
beat people.
Say, no, you can't do that. How bizarre is that? In a place like that, but anyway, I guess it's not our culture, is it?
It's not. An activist for human rights in the north based in South Korea said most of the people who would go to these places are people who made quite a bit of money, normally not officials or the average person.
Mm.
That makes less and less sense the more I read it, but that's the odd spot.
Well, stop reading it. Well, thank you, Dr. Ron. It's been a pleasure.
thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Graham, for coming in, and a very special thank you to Michelle Lawrence, who is... He has an exhibition on at Federation Square here in Melbourne, which will no doubt travel the length and breadth of this fine country of ours. He's taking photographs of everybody who calls Australia home, in a lot of respect, or Melbourne home, some 250-odd nationalities, and it's been a big week of photography for him. And he culminated by coming in here. Have a look at the website, allofus.com.au, if you want to go and see what he's been up to. Some great photos there. Thank you to you, our listeners, for all your correspondence during the course of the week. We do like it. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au or on air at techtalkradio.com.au. And don't forget the forum. You can visit there and have a bit of a chat to other like-minded Tech Talk Radio souls and share your problems. If you can't get that printer to work, Graham will help. Just come up on the floor.
On the floor? Yeah.
There's lots of people there that'll help. We've been having great contributions lately, so it's terrific.
All right, until next week, same stations. It's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.